Okay, today is September 17th, 2014. This is the follow-up interview with Mike Warlam. This is a phone interview. I am in Madison, Wisconsin. Mike is in Seattle, Washington. And my name is Troy Reeves with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. Mike, again, for sound quality purposes, if you could say your name and spell your last name.
Sure. My name is Michael Warlam, W-A-R-L-U-M.
Okay, and that is... that's perfect. That's picking you up nicely. So that volume should be perfect for us. So as I mentioned, Mike, before I turned on the recording, just have a few questions that I gave you last week that I'd like to talk about. And I'm just going to take them in the order that I gave them to you. So
Okay. First
off was a question about basically about activism. The specific question is, would you describe yourself as active in the gay community?
No, not at all. I'm active only in that I live my life upfront and openly. But no, I'm not active. We have over time belonged to a couple of gay organizations here in Seattle, but that was many years ago, and they were more social than activist.
Okay. Now, in Washington, over the course of your time there, since you've spent sort of the bulk of your adult life there, did you participate in any sort of gay pride parades or anything like that?
It's funny you should ask that. About 20 years ago, we were going to a movie on one Saturday afternoon, and we came upon this huge crowd on the way to the theater, and it turned out it was a gay pride parade, which we hadn't paid any attention to and had no idea what was going on. So we thought we better watch, being good citizens. And all that happened was something called Dykes on Bikes, where these huge women went in great semicircles around one block. And this went on and on and on and on and on. And finally we gave up and went to the movie. And then just this year, we were on our way to exhibit at the Seattle Center, and lo and behold, here was the gay pride parade, and we stopped to watch it, and it was the Dykes on Bikes. We're probably the granddaughters of the Dykes on Bikes that we'd seen in the first place. But anyway, that's my sole connection with gay pride parades.
Okay.
Oh, well, we saw one in Bologna one time, which was... saddest thing you've ever seen, about 10 scruffy-looking gay people marching with a banner, and that was about it.
And you said in Bologna?
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to make sure I heard that right.
Yeah, that was purely by chance.
Okay. So the next question then is the question under the topic present/future, and the direct question is there an issue where you feel you've seen the most change in your lifetime?
Yeah, actually there is. The difference in general attitude toward gayness and gay people. As I told you in the last interview, I grew up in an atmosphere that was totally, it was like gay didn't exist. And now it's become chic. We're forever going to dinner parties where 5 years ago people wouldn't have broached the subject except for calling us by each other's names. And suddenly the second question out of everybody's mouth is, how long have you been together? It's really kind of difficult to adjust to, not a bad adjustment, but just different. And I would say, the fact that gay issues make the national news, and the fact that we keep hearing about the court decisions on marriage and all of these things that would have been in my youth, but that's not true. Well, for most of my life, things that have been absolutely taboo subjects are suddenly big news.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I see as the biggest change.
Okay. Since you referenced it, Mike, one of the questions a little farther down the list is your thoughts on the I guess I'll use the word seemingly changing tide towards gay marriage in this country. I wonder if you'd want to elaborate any more on that.
Yeah, neither my partner nor I ever thought about the idea of getting married. It was just something that wasn't in our universe and in our realm of existence. And I was quite amazed that it became an issue, and then that it's gotten as much play and attention and positive response from the courts that it has. I really believe that once it became defined as a civil rights issue, which is exactly what it is, that did a lot toward helping people grasp it and understand it.
And again, this question is, well, right after that one, so I want to ask it too. So have you and Steve gotten married?
Oh, yeah. We got married a year ago, January 2013.
Would you mind talking just a little bit about the ceremony and the day itself?
Oh, sure. We had two couples that are friends of ours to dinner. And while we were at dinner, somebody brought up the idea of are you going to get married? Because the law in Washington had been changed, I guess, first of the year. And we hadn't really thought seriously about it. We'd thought about it, but not seriously before that. And so we said, well, fine, let's do it. And so one of each couple was the male of one couple had been a Buddhist abbot at a monastery in Nova Scotia, and the wife of the other couple had gone online and gotten certified as one of those, I don't know what you call it, one of those mail order ministers.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I don't know why she did that. But anyway, we had them officiate, and then the other two of the couples were our witnesses. And we got married in our living room right in front of the fireplace. With Steve went out and got a forest of stargazer lilies, and so we had lilies all over the back of the fireplace and so on. And so we had a short ceremony, and then we had dinner, and that was it. It was a lovely occasion and something that I treasure.
So just to clarify, Mike, that all happened in one evening?
Oh, no, that the plans were made following the dinner party.
Okay.
and then it took place maybe a month later or so.
Okay, thank you. Have you had the, I'll use this word, honor or privilege of being attending any friends' marriage ceremonies?
No, we haven't. We received an invitation and sent cards and so on to a second cousin of mine who married her partner in Iowa just shortly ago. But no, we haven't been invited to any gay weddings.
Okay. So I'm going to back up. We were talking about the issue that's seen the most change. Is there any issue or any idea that you feel just really hasn't changed that much since?
Well, the attitudes of a number of people, these people who call themselves Christians, but don't act like Christians, the whole Muslim world, and assorted other people either haven't changed their opinion or they've gotten much more entrenched. And that I find sad and worrisome. For the most of the time I've lived, the way civilized people handled the gay question was by just simply never bringing it up. You know, I still have a second cousin and his wife here in the Seattle area that still adhere to that same kind of thing. They just don't mention it. And I think for a lot of people, probably the vast majority in this country at least, the whole question was just not on their radar. It was after Stonewall when things started to open up and people started to have discussions about being gay that it came to the forefront as an issue. And I do believe that there are many people who have had to take a stand, now have been forced to take a stand, and are more entrenched in their opinion than they were before. I say that, and then I do need to add that I've run into any number of people who were religious and who were conservative, who are very accepting and pleased about knowing that we're gay and that we got married. Steve always says it's all the old ladies who have sons who are gay, but that particular thing has been very encouraging to me.
So the last question on this topic is, sort of taking a look in your crystal ball and wondering, we've already talked about gay marriage, but is there other issues or other parts of being gay that you think society's opinions will change over the next few years?
Well, there's a certain political group and a certain political bent that if they got in power would try to change things back to the way they used to be or worse. But I think it's a case of the genie being out of the bottle. I don't think we've come so far in acceptance that I don't think it can go back. So I think the gay movement is here to stay. Of course, that's purely a prediction. I have no way of knowing that. I think things were pretty open in Germany before the Second World War. And then they ended up killing everybody. But I feel encouraged by what has happened and think it'll continue to happen.
Thank you for that. So we're now moving into the questions, at least a couple still that we haven't gotten to. And these are from questions that I had thought of before I sent you the initial set of questions. So this one is about the HIV and AIDS epidemic in the 80s and your thoughts on that and if you had lost any friends because of that.
To answer the second part first, I didn't lose any friends that I knew of. There may have been people I'd known in the past who succumbed to it, but I had completely lost touch with them, so I wouldn't know that. I should also say that neither Steve and I have ever been very comfortable having gay friends. We don't have a lot of gay friends, nor have we ever had. Used to be that there was too much sexual tension when we get together with other gay men, and then that, as it will, sort of went away. But we tried, I mentioned earlier these couple of social groups we belong to, and we discovered there that simply being gay, it's as if all black people, I mean, that whole thing about all black people knowing each other and all working together and doing things, you have to have more in common than being gay to really have friendships. So we don't know too many gay people. As to the epidemic itself, I think that one of the many reasons that Ronald Reagan should be burning in hell, which I assume he is the fact that his administration never mentioned it. and people were dying all around them. And the fact that the kind of struggle had to go on with ACT UP and those various movements at the time, the fact that that kind of struggle had to go on to make people pay attention to the fact that there was an epidemic that was killing thousands of people is just, it's simply unconscionable. You know, the very idea of our even calling ourselves a civilized society and letting something like that go on is just mind-boggling.
Thank you for that. It looks like the last question is, and I think you've touched on this both in the interview you did, the larger interview you did about Professor Gard, and maybe in the first session, but just an overall big picture question about how being gay affected you, both personally and politically, or politically, no, personally and professionally.
Personally and professionally, yeah. I have pretty well covered the part about professionally. I do believe, with no proof, that there were two or three jobs that I didn't get promoted in or didn't get to keep because of my orientation, even though in one or two cases I wasn't even sure of my orientation when this happened. But personally, I think that growing up gay in the society as it was at the time was very detrimental to me. I had incredible self-esteem problems. I was very shy. I had lots of social problems related to being gay, even though it was something I wasn't sure of or proud of or even understood. And then I think once I finally, I had a lot of therapy, not specifically around the gay issue. Of course, that did play a prominent part in it, but I had a lot of therapy which helped me a lot in accepting myself for who I am in all kinds of ways. And I think once I reached the point of acceptance where I could say who and what I was and be proud of it, I think my life has been vastly enriched and improved by that. There's something, you know, there's all this foolishness, specious argument about making a choice. Well, I never made a choice. I just accepted who I was. And if there's any choice to be made, it's between being mentally healthy and living a lie. And once I embraced my sexuality and who I was, I began to open up creatively, intellectually, socially, etc. And so it's made a great deal of difference. The acceptance has made a great deal of difference.
Mike, one more thing that isn't on the list. It's something I thought about and didn't put on the list. You talked, well, actually not really talked, when you jotted down some notes when I sent the first set of questions, and towards the end you were talking about or wrote how difficult it was for you to talk about this, or not necessarily difficult, but just it wasn't as easy as I think you thought it was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if that's still maybe some sort of residual, I don't mean to be an armchair psychologist, but maybe a bit of residual effect of, you know, the way you grew up and how being gay was treated, you know, in your...
I suppose so. What I really was referring to when I wrote that in the note was that I was kind of shocked as I went to form answers to the questions that you sent me, how superficial my thinking is about all this, and about how I really haven't spent the time dwelling on it that one might have thought I would, which may be repression. I think you might be right on with that, although I'm not conscious of that, but there probably is a sort of built-in reticence that's still there.
Yeah, I just, I think it would be, at least in my mind, it would be hard even in, 2014, talking about, the issues that you went through as a kid, a young adult, teenager, young adult, because it was so trying on you.
Yeah, it was really. And, I was reflecting on that interview as I prepared for this one, and I was thinking, I really don't have a lot to complain about. I realized that I was whining a lot about it in the last interview, but I've had, by and large, a pretty easy road to hoe in as compared to many other people. I never descended into alcoholism. I had a great problem with depression, but I think that was chemical. I don't think it had to do with being gay, although that probably figured into it, of course. But considering, I think I mentioned last time that I think it's a great blessing that a person doesn't realize how bad a situation is while they're going through it. It's not until you look back that you realize what a miserable situation it was. And I think that's a great gift. I mean, just to not get bogged down in things and just play the hand you're dealt and go ahead, I think is one thing that makes us very lucky as human beings. And then later on, look back on it when you feel stronger and reflect on, well, holy cats, that really wasn't an ideal situation. But I can't say that I really was a martyr or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. So, Mike, the last question is just making sure you have space if there's anything on your mind about, about being gay, about your sexuality, that you feel appropriate to get on the record before we wrap up.
Yeah, I feel very strongly, and I should have gotten into this earlier, I feel very strongly that there is a great deal of work to be done yet as far as acceptance of gay people. As long as you have people talking about it being a choice, the question I always want to ask them is, when did you choose not to be gay? When did you choose to be heterosexual? The idea of it being a choice is so specious. And the other arguments that have been used, this thing that was, they finally got over because it was so stupid, this thing about equal rights being special rights for gay people, when all anybody was ever asking for was to be treated like everybody else. And all of the foolishness and superficiality of these arguments is just, I think if the people who were anti-gay would ever come up with a cogent argument that made sense, maybe people would listen to them a little more. But they've just made such fools of themselves with the way they've handled the whole situation that you can't help but be kind of disgusted by the whole thing. I think when it gets to the point where young people, teenagers, are contemplating suicide because they might not be gay, I think maybe then it's time to re-examine things. But at this point, we still have this horrible instance of alcoholism, of teenage suicide, of persecution of gay people by societies like those in Africa that have passed these laws about sending people to prison for life and so on. The Soviet Union, which is very repressive. China, I don't even know what's happening in China. The whole Muslim world, there's a great deal to be done, even though strides have been made.
Mike, thank you for that, and thank you for giving of your time today and whenever we did the first interview. I think it was earlier this month.
Yeah.
So I'm going to end the recording now, and then I'd chat with you for a few minutes.
Okay, you bet. Thanks.
All right, so this concludes the second or the follow-up interview with Mike Warlam. Mike, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you very much. I can't tell you what this has meant to me. I feel like my life has been given extra felicity.